Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Jeff Brown here with the Juneau Afternoon. Today we'll find out about upcoming search workshops. Lita Buss will give us a preview of this month's Mudroom event. Lena Gilbertson from Big Brothers Big Sisters will be here to highlight April's Bull for Kids' Sake. We'll learn about poetry out loud, and we'll talk with some local youth about their participation in the Arctic Winter Games. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More today on a Juneau Afternoon. Strong wind is expected from this evening through Tuesday morning. Rain likely by late this afternoon, high temperatures around 43 degrees. Forecast for tonight, windy and rain, possibly heavy at times. Tomorrow, rain, high temperatures around 41 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A special report from the Canadian Parliament on missing and murdered Aboriginal women has been made public. It makes 16 recommendations, but stops short of calling for a national investigation. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, that has disappointed many Native leaders.
I was almost crying. I was shocked. I was mad and wasn't surprised, but I was hoping until the last second.
Michelle Odette is the president of the Quebec Native Women's Association. She's one of many of Canada's Native leaders to be critical of the report called Invisible Women, A Call to Action. The parliamentary report, after months of hearings, came up with 16 recommendations. They include the creation of a public awareness and prevention campaign, the implementation of a national DNA-based missing persons index, and the possibility of collecting police data on violence against Aboriginal women and girls that includes an ethnicity variable, all as part of a coordinated action plan. Opposition members of Parliament say the recommendations are either not new or would do nothing to prevent or stop violence against Native women and girls, and the report would not endorse a call for a public inquiry. Odette blames the government of Prime Minister Stephen Harper.
They pretend to be a proactive government, that they do action. Well, for me, being in politics for the past 20 years, I have to say that it's sad that we have more and more women missing, more and more women killed. We are 5 times more at risk to be killed from a criminal crime, etc. Statistics are there, and coincidentally, it's when the Harper government arrived.
It's estimated there have been more than 600 murdered or missing Aboriginal women over the past 20 years. The Assembly of First Nations also called the report disappointing and says it fails to show the needed commitment and resources to adequately address this ongoing tragedy. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker wants more time to rule on a proposed casino near Milwaukee. One of the potential developers, the Menominee Nation, supports Walker's decision, but tribes that oppose the gaming facility hope, however long the governor takes, his answer is no. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports.
The Menominee and Seminole tribes want to open a gaming hall and entertainment complex on an off-reservation site in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker says he's been studying ways to allow the casino without hurting other tribal gaming in the area or the amount of gaming revenue that comes to the state. Walker has now asked the Interior Department to give him an extra 6 months to decide, possibly pushing his ruling to next February, well after the Republican governor faces re-election this fall. Walker denies he's playing politics.
The law allows any governor, no matter whether they were up for election or not, to take up this amount of time, and so we're going to do our due diligence and take the amount of time that we have under the law.
The Ho-Chunk Nation owns two casinos in southern Wisconsin. Tribal President John Greendeer says he doesn't mind if Governor Walker takes more time to decide, but Greendeer says the Ho-Chunk remain opposed to a Kenosha casino.
The Ho-Chunk Nation has been very clear about their opposition to off-reservation gaming in their traditional and cultural historical area in southern Wisconsin. And that's not simply for the Seminole and Menominee, but that applies to all the tribes as well.
The Forest County Potawatomi, owners of a casino in Milwaukee, say they trust the extra time the governor is taking will allow him to conclude that shipping hundreds of millions of dollars to the Florida Seminole tribe is not in the best interest of Wisconsin. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
On this day in 1861, poet Emily Pauline Johnson was born on the Six Nations Reserve in Canada. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. First guests are Jeremy Johnson, Mike Lopez, and Allison Natcher here to talk about CERT workshops. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, what is CERT? It's an acronym. What does it mean?
Community Emergency Response Team. And we help to supplement the first responders in case of a emergency, so a natural disaster, that type of thing.
How many people are on the CERT team locally
this time?
Right now there are over 100 total registered members, and we have about 40 or so active participants. We're looking to expand that number. My personal goal is to have 1% of the population CERT ready.
And you're having some upcoming training here in April?
Yeah, we have what we do is semi-annually, twice a year. We have CERT training. It's free, offered by the city. And anyone that decides to be a regular active member gets a backpack full of really cool emergency gear. It's coming up April Fool's Day. Don't think it's a joke. It's serious business, being prepared.
What's involved in the training?
Well, I'm doing the I'm one of the lead instructors. My name is Mike. And beginning on April 1st, we'll begin the introduction into the CERT. And then we have 8 different classes with different topics. First one, again, is the first class is on introduction into the CERT program, why we have it, how we're, again, augmenting the emergency responders in the community. And then the second class will be the firefighting basic fire suppression, where the students learn to put out a fire with a fire extinguisher.
A real fire.
And this is a real fire, so, and no, we do not toast marshmallows.
Though we have been tempted.
There goes my question. why are you personally involved, each of you? Allison?
I'm actually involved because my prior job in the United States Coast Guard was a contingency planner, and I did a lot of emergency preparedness. And so having just moved to Juneau, I kind of wanted to continue doing that job in a way, volunteering.
Mike?
Mine was my wife and I were both volunteer firefighters here in the community, and we gave that up. So this is one of the ways that I could give back to the community and stay involved in as a volunteer and emergency preparedness.
Jeremy?
I'm a glutton for punishment. No, I'm just kidding. I always felt that kind of everyday people needed to be prepared for cataclysmic emergencies. I was in a tornado as a child. Freshman in high school, and after my son was born, I was involved with the CERT program at UAS, and I thought I'd like to see it promoted throughout the whole of the city.
People who are sitting there listening to the radio, why should they do it?
Oh, emergency preparedness is an everyday sort of thing. In my opinion, there is no reason not to be prepared for just in case, you know. I feel like the training that comes out of these CERT sessions is pretty important. Well, for one, it allows you the opportunity to feel confident in case of a real, you know, cataclysmic emergency. The normal things that we think of are avalanche or earthquake or maybe a flood, something that'll knock out bridges and keep you separate from the normal emergency services. And this is a friends and neighbors kind of initiative. So I really do think of it as like I'm prepared for a fire drill at my apartment complex, so that makes me one leg up in the case of a fire. That kind of preparedness.
And the thing is, with the cert instruction, the topics that we teach are things that people would need in the event of any everyday needs. And yes, we want them to become active members in the cert program and to stay active within the program. But it's free training, and even if they don't stay as active members, they still get training. And for us, that's a win-win, because there you have trained people throughout the community of Juneau that have received training instead of people that have not been able to have the training.
What are the obligations that you're asking of people in general?
In general, we have monthly meetings. We ask that you remain competent by doing advanced training. The advanced training is we basically do the same thing that we learn in the basic class, but we use other topics so then we can reinforce what we learned. And then you remain competent by doing tasks, and we task you with certain things to do and accomplish throughout the year.
And your training is coming up in the beginning of April.
Yes, it's going to begin in April. We're looking forward to this training. As an instructor, I'm excited because of the other instructors that are involved in this training. I like it because I used to be the only instructor. So now we have more, so it's really great. They're passionate about the training and the people from Juneau that do attend the training. It's exciting to see them there. And yes, we appreciate them giving up their valuable time to come to the training.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Two out of the three were ex-military.
Yes.
Is this
yes.
a military-only kind of organization?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
It's citizen-driven. So, I mean, specifically citizen-driven. It's great that we have so many people that are related to the military that are involved. They bring a breadth of knowledge and skills that are, I mean, truly amazing stuff. But the citizen preparedness is what our focus is. If an emergency responder is not available, hopefully you'll have a CERT member who has some skills that they can lean on. You know, some of the skills are as simple as first aid and, like we said, using a fire extinguisher to extinguish a small fire. We're not going into burning buildings here. You know, we're not rushing into partially collapsed structures. But if we feel that that we can do something immediately to help mitigate some of the long-term damage that's part of the fallout of a natural disaster, that's where I really feel the citizen initiative is important.
I'm talking with Jeremy Johnson, Mike Lopez, and Allison Natcher about the CERT workshops that are coming up in April. Mike, you want to quickly go over the schedule again, please?
Yes. What we have is beginning April 1st. We have introduction to CERT. April 8th, we're going to have basic fire suppression. The 12th, we're going to do disaster medical operations. Again, disaster medical operations, this is where we get to triage people and use emergency medical treatment to someone that's injured in a disaster. Then we can, next session, April 15th, will be light search and rescue operations, and then using cribbing to support falling debris. 22nd will be the terrorism and how it affects CERT. And then the 24th will be the course review. And this is where we get to put everyone through all their paces with an actual disaster scenario from everything that they learned. And they go through all the steps. And I think it's a very rewarding class. And we appreciate everyone that attends.
Seems like a dream come true for those people who were growing up wanting to be a firefighter.
Yeah. Yes.
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
And this is all free.
It is all free. There's no cost. The packs that are used purchased by the city with city grant funds, and that helps offset some of the equipment that we have and we use in the CERT program. Going back to something that Jeremy said about the different people involved in CERT, what we like about the people that are involved in CERT is that they come from all walks of life and all different professions.
Absolutely.
And with CERT, this is one of the things that's so great about CERT, because it is a citizen initiative, is that we get to use all that knowledge and skills that they already have. So we don't have to teach them those other things that they already know. We get to use that to our advantage on anything that case-by-case scenario that we may have a need for.
All right. Anything you might want to bring up that I forgot to ask?
One thing I wanted to say about the schedule is that the sessions are 2 or 3 hour sessions. So the Tuesday sessions are 2 hours, and the Saturday sessions are 3 hours. And the Tuesday sessions are done at, in the idea is after work and on the weekend. So the Tuesday sessions are 6:30 to 8:30, and the Saturday sessions are 9 to noon. So it kind of makes it so that a busy person with a busy work schedule can still try and slide us in.
And where can people get more information?
They can contact me at 796-8989 or mlopez@bartletthospital.org.
All right, thanks very much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A little bit of music from the guest artist band at the Alaska Folk Festival that's coming up here. Bonsoir, Kaysen. From the guest artist band at the Alaska Folk Festival this year, Bonsoir, Katen. In studio with me now is Bill Legere, General Manager of KTO, here to talk about a Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah, actually, Jeff, this is sort of an oddball request, but I hear that you're good at finding things here on Juno Afternoon and K2FM, so we're on a search for something. In 1986, Prairie Home Companion broadcast live from Juno in July of 86, and Garrison Keillor and the whole cast was here for a big show, two big shows actually, from the stage of Juno Douglas High School. And now all these years later, it's the 40th anniversary of Prairie Home Companion is coming up, and the folks who produced the show are really looking hard for any photographs from that appearance Garrison made here in Juno in 1986. And so far we've come up empty-handed. You know, people didn't have iPhones and digital cameras back then. We've talked to the people who would likely have taken photographs, and nobody has one. I've got a file folder here that has just one picture in it, and it's actually Garrison on a fishing trip in Juneau. That's the only picture we have. So this is just a plea to anybody who is here and who is at the show in 1986 to maybe dig through those old negatives and, you know, your old photo albums and see if you have a picture of Garrison or the cast, either at the high school or at the governor's mansion. He did a reception there, or just, you know, anything you might have. And if you do, get in touch with us.
And this show is unique for one particular reason. That is the only show that he nearly went out over time.
Yep. It's famous because Garrison got into a very long, elaborate monologue about Alaska, about a woman who came here who turned out later to be his long-lost aunt. This is his story, and about her travels throughout the state. She became a newspaper editor and was always on the march, and he could not end the monologue. It went on and on and on, and everyone was looking at their watches, and it was, the show had less than a minute to go, and they had another act waiting backstage, ready to come on, but Garrison didn't wrap up the monologue, just barely finished, and they played the little jingle at the end, and so there were no closing credits. Everyone in Juno who worked on the show didn't get a thank you. And the musical group that was backstairs, I think they were...
Eagle Raven Dancers,
right. Garrison says he could hear them nervously moving back and forth, and he could hear their bells, and he knew that they wanted to get on stage, but they never never made it on for their appearance. So it's a special show, one that Garrison remembers, and we'd like to help him out. See if anyone here in Chino's got a picture from, let's see, it was...
July 1986.
Just in case you organize your photos by date, July 12th, 1986, a Saturday night, live from the high school. So if you're here and you got a picture, let us know. You can contact me at KTOO, Bill at KTOO, or Christy at KTOO, or give us a call here at 586-1670, and if you do have a picture, we'll make arrangements to have a copy made and sent to the people at Prairie Home Companion.
All right, Bill, thank you for coming by.
Sure, anytime.
First portion of our show brought to you by Powder Milk Biscuits in the big blue box with a picture of the biscuit on the cover. Made from whole wheat, raised by Norwegian bachelor farmers, so you know they're not only good for you, they're also pure mostly. Give shy persons strength to get up and do what needs to be done. Heavens, they're tasty and expeditious. Has your family tried them powder milk? Well, if your family's tried them all, you know you satisfied them. They're the real hot item powder milk.
Be kind to your well-footed friends. For a duck, maybe somebody's mother. Be kind to your friends in the swamp, where the weather is very cold and damp. You may think that this is the end, but it's not. There's one more chorus. Be kind to your friends in the swamp, where the weather is very cold and damp.
I had little children that wouldn't lay an egg. Poured hot water up and down its leg, and the little chicken hollered and the little chicken baked. Hot and chicken, a hard boiled egg. What did I say? Because I could not stop for death, it kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality.
Oh, you can't get to heaven on roller skating.
Because
you roll right by,
roll right by
them pearly gates.
Pearly.
Oh, you can't get to heaven on roller skates. You'll roll right by them pearly gates. I ain't gonna grieve my Lord no more.
It's 3:23, and you are tuned to KTVO News in Juneau. In the studio with me now is Tom Cosgrove here to talk about Mudrooms coming up very soon, tomorrow night, I believe.
You bet. Right? Tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at Northern Lights United Church. And the theme this month around is wildlife, and that can be construed a couple different ways, right? It could be one word, it could be two words, and it depends on where you put the accent. So we're going to see what interesting stories we generate out of this one.
Now, for those people who haven't heard about Mudrooms yet, could you give us a description
of
what goes on there?
Mudrooms is a monthly storytelling event. It's seven people telling stories, 7 minutes each, on a theme. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, a theme this month is wildlife. And people, these themes are loosely interpreted, and I want to stress, this is a storytelling event, but these are not professional storytellers. These are people you know and love from the neighborhood, your neighborhood probably, that get up and tell a story. And this time around, we've got seven people, and the brave folks this time around are Mark Gannat, Kevin Hood, Jonas Lamb, Steve Gilbertson, Peggy Brown, Bridget Smith, and our own founder, Alita Buss.
Sounds fun. And the money that's raised goes to support a local community
organization. Yeah, it's a $7 entry fee, and that goes to local charities. Our charity this time around is Discovery Southeast. We've given to the Big Brothers and Big Sisters also this year. And so all the money we raise goes right to charity. There is no every dollar paid at the door goes on through to a charity. So it's part of our community building effort.
Now, last month, the theme was, I can't remember exactly what it was.
Theme last month, now you're going to get a, it was On the Road. And that was a lot of fun. We had wide interpretations of On the Road, literally hitchhiking stories to a trip across Africa and refugees. So that was a very interesting topic also. And we're getting regularly over 200 people at Northern Lights United Church at the corner of 10th and B. Yeah, 9th and B? 9th and B. We get close to 200 people almost every time. So it's I encourage people to get there early. You get there and you can buy a cookie and sit down and enjoy the show. But we are filling up, so please come early.
And people sign up to be tellers.
Well, this season, knock on wood, we're all the way full through our May show, but we're going to be selecting new themes for the coming season. Coming up here, we'll announce those at our May show. And at that time, we'll be open. We've got a website out there. You can go to mudrooms.org, and there's a sign-up. You can do it electronically, or you can call Alita Buss, Amanda Compton, myself, Mark Wheeler, and a number of other people that are on the board. So you can give them a holler. We'd be glad to rope you into it.
And in case you missed him coming to the last Mudrooms event, then it's going to be broadcast again on KTOO News in a couple of weeks on a Monday at 7 o'clock.
That's correct.
And Tom Cosgrove, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, it's always nice, though, to come here on Juno afternoon and chat and be able to get our message out. So thank you much, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 10th of March, 2014. It was on this day, 1864, President Lincoln signed an executive order promoting Ulysses S. Grant to the rank of Lieutenant General, making him the commander of all Union troops. Lincoln was dissatisfied with the leadership of the Northern Army. He was upset that Major General George Meade failed to mobilize in time to pursue Lee's army after the victory at Gettysburg. The Confederate forces eluded Meade. They lived to fight another day. Whereas Grant had won big victories in western Tennessee and at the siege of Vicksburg, taking control of the Mississippi River, dividing the Confederacy in two. Grant took charge. He was aggressive, as Lincoln wanted him to be, fought bloody but successful campaigns, and accepted Lee's surrender at Appomattox in April 1865. It's the birthday of Henry Fowler, born in Tunbridge, Kent, England, 1858, a lexicographer, lived in a one-room cottage on the island of Guernsey in the English Channel, lived like a hermit, and wrote a book, The King's English, which begins, "Anyone who wishes to become a good writer should endeavor before he allows himself to be tempted by the more showy qualities to be direct, simple, brief, vigorous, and lucid. Prefer the familiar word to the far-fetched. Prefer the concrete word to the abstract. Prefer the single word to the circumlocution. Prefer the short word to the long. Prefer the Saxon word to the romance." T.S. Eliot said, "Every person who wishes to write ought to read Fowler's Dictionary of Modern English Usage for a quarter of an hour every night before going to bed." It's the birthday of the jazz cornetist Bix Beiderbecke, born Davenport, Iowa, 1903, made great recordings with the Wolverines starting in 1923. And it was on this day, 1965, Neil Simon's play The Odd Couple opened on Broadway, starring Walter Matthau as Oscar, the sloppy sports writer, and Art Carney as Felix, the fussy, sensitive man. The two of them move in together and become roommates.
after their marriages fall apart. Here's a poem for today by David Shoemate, Chinese Restaurant. After an argument, my family always dined at the Chinese restaurant. Something about the Orient washed the bitterness away, like a riverbank where you rest for a while. The owner bowed as we entered, the face of one who had seen too much, a revolution, the torture of loved ones, horrors he would never reveal. His wife ushered us to our table, her steps smaller than ours. The younger daughter brought us tea. The older one took our orders in perfect English. Each year, her beauty was more delicate than before. Sometimes we were the only customers, and they smiled from afar as we ate duck and shrimp with our chopsticks. After dinner, we sat in the comfort of their silence. My brother told a joke. My mother folded a napkin into the shape of a bird. My sister broke open our cookies and read our fortunes aloud. As we left, my father always shook the old man's hand. A poem by David Shoemate, Chinese Restaurant, from The Floating Bridge, published by the University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity, Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Juno World Affairs Council presents Mary Miller this Thursday, March 13th at 5 p.m. in the At 360 space located in the KTOO building. Mary will be talking about her experiences as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Ukraine, where she was stationed until just last week when they pulled her out. That's this Thursday, March 13th, 5 p.m. at the new At 360 space in the KTOO building. This message is brought to you by JWAC, bringing the world to Juno.
Time is 3:33 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juno. Jeff Brown, your host for Juno Afternoon Today. In the studio with me, Lena Gilbertson from Big Brothers Big Sisters, here to talk about the biggest fundraiser of the year for them, Bowl for Kids' Sake. Lena, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, first things first, describe Big Brothers Big Sisters, please.
Okay. Basically, what we do, we're a nationwide organization, but here in Juneau, we have a program in all of Alaska, actually. We set up mentoring matches between adult volunteers and youth who need and could use and want a mentor, and basically, our mission is to help Alaska's children reach their potential through these professionally supported one-to-one friendships.
About how many matches do you have here in Juneau at the present time?
I believe right now we have around 130 matches.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And your biggest fundraiser of the year is Bowl for Kids' Sake. You want to tell me how that works, please?
Sure. So Bowl for Kids' Sake is our biggest fundraiser and I think our also most fun fundraiser. And essentially how it works is community members put together bowling teams. And these bowling teams are really fundraising teams. So they go around the community and ask for donations from their friends, family, neighbors, and basically just kind of get the word out that Big Brothers Big Sisters needs the support, and all the donations go directly towards our programs here in Juneau. And then to thank these teams for their efforts, we get together on April 5th, and we have a big day of bowling and pizza and drinks and lots of really good prizes for top fundraisers and different door prizes and everything. So, it's essentially about getting community members involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and in the end, we'd like to be able to serve more kids here in Juneau.
I've been involved in a few of those, and they're fun.
Yeah, they are. A lot of fun.
Prizes get awarded for the first person who knocks down does a strike or a spare, or because there's a split. If the person can knock it over, they get the prize. And
yep.
It always seems to be a fun adventure, experience and camaraderie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We have an MC for every bowling session, and we also have really good prizes this year. The top fundraiser between Juneau and Fairbanks actually gets two Alaska Airlines tickets. So that's really cool. And then specifically in Juneau, our top fundraisers get things like helicopter tours or gym memberships and that kind of thing. So.
And the teams always have clever names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of bowling puns. Yeah.
What's your goal this year? Number of teams and funds raised?
We'd like to have about 40 teams this year. Our end goal is $39,000, which is a little more than last year. So we're trying to really increase what we raise. And yeah, like I said, ultimately it does go directly towards the programs here in Juneau. So it's local.
And how do people get involved?
To get involved, you can either call our office. We actually have a website, too, which makes it really easy for folks to donate. So I, for example, I have a bowling team, and I sign them up online, and people can donate.
What's your team?
My team is Quite Striking. and people can actually just go to my team page and donate directly there with a credit card. But, yeah, to get involved, that website is bbbsak.org/bowl. Or you can call our office at 586-3350 if you have any questions, and we can help you set up a team.
So you don't have to be a member of a team or set a team already amassed when you first sign up?
No, anybody can sign up, really. Yeah, and then I encourage people to, if you know someone who has a team and has been soliciting donations, to donate to them. You know, any little bit helps. That's the fun thing about this fundraiser is, you know, people are donating $10 here, $5, $25. It really... You know, whatever people can give, it all adds up.
All right, Lena Gilbertson, thank you for coming by and talking about Bowling for Kids' Sake coming up April 5th, which is a Saturday right before the Folk Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I don't think so. I would encourage people to sign up. It does take volunteers and donors to keep our programs going here in Juneau, and we do get a lot of our funding from individual donors here in Juneau. So just so people understand that it takes a lot of community support, and we really appreciate it.
And Lena, thank you for coming by.
All right, thanks for having me.
I like to go bowling with my friend Bert, with my bowling ball and my bowling shirt. I like to roll the ball down the lane. I'll throw a few strikes, maybe some spares, that's what I like. Bowling is my kind of game. I aim for the one pin, two pin, three pin, four, five pins down the lane. With a boom and a bang, they hit the floor and I throw the ball again. I like to go bowling with my friend Bert, with my bowling ball and my bowling shirt. Bowling is my kind of game.
Tune to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Kari Grubin here to talk about Poetry Out Loud, which is coming up tomorrow. Thank you for coming up, Kari.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty darn good today. So Poetry Out Loud, for people who haven't never heard of Poetry Out Loud, what is Poetry Out Loud, please?
Poetry Out Loud is a national arts education program, and it's put on by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Poetry Foundation, and the Alaska State Competition is put on by the Alaska State Council on the Arts and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And we also got some support from the Observatory Books this year. And it's a competition that starts at classroom level, and the winner in the classroom goes on to the school competition, and then they go on to regional finals and then the state finals, which is happening in Juneau tomorrow at 360 North Studio, the brand new beautiful studio that they have downstairs here. It's open to the public and free. The only thing is that seating is a little limited, so we advise that people get tickets in advance. And then we have a winner and a runner-up that will be announced at the competition tomorrow. They both win money for themselves and their school, and then the winner goes on to Washington, D.C. to compete for $20,000 in scholarships at the national state final, at the national finals in April.
Now, these poems are all memorized?
It's all memorized, and it's actually, if you've never been to any of these before, you'd be quite surprised by the level of performance that you see there by these kids. So we have 10 finalists from all over Alaska. They're all high school students, and they all recite three poems, or they recite two poems first, and then the top placements people, they get to perform their third poem in the end, and then the winner and runner-up will be announced.
And for those of you who may be in the fence about going to a poetry event, these are great.
It's great.
these young people performing up there, and it's entertaining, it's thrilling, and it's exciting too because it's a competition.
Mm-hmm. It is, and the students will have been through a pretty intense program from 8 a.m. in the morning, going through some coaching, and then they'll go and see the UAS campus. They will meet with their legislators, and then we'll run through everything, just a kind of choreography of things later on, and then it's competition time. So they have been going nonstop pretty much all day. And the experience from previous years is that they are very happy about the experience of coming to Juno and just doing all that stuff, and also the competition itself, and what they're gaining from the poems that they're learning by heart. Because a lot of these people, a lot of the kids, they really try to find a poem that speaks to them, that give them something, you can see that some of these people connect very closely to what they're reading.
So these aren't original poems, these are poems that exist out there?
That is correct. Yeah, there's about 700 poems to choose from on the Poetry Out Loud website, the national website, and so they have been looking through these poems. And I know that the Juno competitor, which is Rafael Salas from Thunder Mountain High School, just heard him this morning, was talking about how he just decided to pick a letter. And he picked three poems within that letter that spoke to him, that he thought it could stand for. So it's kind of funny.
Isn't that necessarily the poem? It's the performance of the poem.
It's the performance of the poem that is being judged.
What other things are the possibilities of judging on?
I don't know all of these criteria by heart, I have to say, but there's definitely presence and how they're able to convey the meaning of the poem, how their how their clarity of speech, and there's also a little bit, there's a criteria of just what is the difficulty level of the poem itself, and then accuracy. They have to say the poem word by word correctly. and that's a pretty big one. But yeah, so you could look up all of those criteria at poetryoutloud.org.
But it's much better just to go to the KTO building tomorrow. What time does it start again?
It starts at 5 p.m. at the 360 North studio at the KTOO building. And you can get tickets in advance. They're free, but I advise that you get tickets in advance at jahc.org, or you can call 586-2787 and just reserve your free ticket.
Seems like there's about room for 80 people to come in there. And
yeah, I think we're up to about 60 people now. So,
and this will be broadcast on 360 North sometime in the future? This will be broadcast on 360 North sometime?
It will, on March 23rd, so I heard. And it will also be live, it will be a live webcast of this. So you can tune into that, and we'll post the link on our website, jahc.org, where you can tune into the webcast tomorrow.
Corey Grubin, thank you so much for coming by. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Yes, come and see our Flying Karamazov Brothers show on March 25th. So when you go to our website to check out Poetry Out Loud, check out that one too.
And you got Bela Fleck in Chicory coming up in the near future?
Yes, in April, end of April.
Got my tickets already?
Yes.
Corey, thank you so much for coming by the station today. Poetry Out Loud tomorrow at 5 o'clock at the KTO at 360 North Studios. Free, but get your tickets early.
Yes.
This is Bird Note. One of the rarest natural habitats in America is found in Florida. Thousands of years ago, rising sea levels isolated much of the Florida Peninsula as an island. During that long isolation, a unique oak scrub ecosystem developed. The Florida scrub jay is one among many special animals and plants that evolved with this habitat, now protected by the Archbold Biological Station. Eastern towhees and loggerhead shrikes are common in the dense scrub habitat. But unlike the towhee and the shrike, Florida scrub jays are found nowhere else. Because they're fascinating birds and quite tame around humans, the jays have been studied for many years. They live in family groups, the young of the previous year helping to raise the current young. This altruistic behavior seemed surprising until studies with banded birds showed that one of the young would immediately take the place of an adult that died. Because they depend on acorns during winter, Florida scrub jays can survive only in oak scrub. Populations have declined by 90% because the birds have lost much of their special habitat to citrus groves, pastures, and development. Now, people are working hard to protect what remains. Bird Note celebrates groups everywhere that are improving bird habitat. Learn more at birdnote.org.
Time is 3:48, and you are tuned to KTO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Jeff Brown is your host today. In the studio with me now, we have some young people involved in the Arctic Winter Games here locally. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
First of all, you want to identify yourselves, please?
My name is Shane Muller, and I've had the honor to go play in Fairbanks for the Team Alaska.
I'm Corey Box, and I'm also going to Fairbanks to play for Team Alaska.
I'm Quinn Giss, and I'm joining them to play for Team Alaska.
Tell me more about Team Alaska, please, if you could, please.
It is a team represented by Alaskans who were chosen to represent their state and compete against other countries.
How long have you been playing hockey?
I've been playing for about 10 years.
I'll ask you each of you, what's special about the hockey? Why do you play, and what excites you about it?
I don't know. Ever since I started playing hockey, I just can't get over how much fun it is. It just feels right.
I like the teamwork and how everyone works together to beat the other team.
I enjoy making plays and having fun with my friends.
Tell me more about your involvement in the Arctic Winter Games, please, Ed. How many teams are there?
Well, the Arctic Winter Games is made up of Team Alaska and all the provinces of the Arctic provinces in Canada, as well as Russian teams and a lot of the other Scandinavian teams. Not every team makes it every year, but they try to incorporate as many Arctic nations and provinces as possible. So I'm not sure how many teams there are this year, but these guys are all representing the Juneau Douglas Ice Association in the state of Alaska. With a bunch of different players from various areas throughout the state, all together on the same team. So most of these guys have never played with anybody else on their team before. Corey and Quinn are going to both be on the Bantam team for Team Alaska, and Shane Moeller, as well as Grant Ainsworth, who's not here with us right now, will be on the midget team, and then Emma Kelke's on the girls team representing for Team Alaska.
What's the process of getting to be selected for the team?
So you send in an application. You can include video footage and just why you want to play, and they just select from whoever sends in applications.
Seems to be quite an honor.
Yeah, definitely.
What did you feel like when you first were chosen?
I was really surprised. I was surprised. I didn't think I was going to make the cut, but I did.
Was it an email or a phone call?
It was a phone call.
What was it?
I was just really excited, and I was actually at hockey practice when they called, and so my mom called me and told me that I'd made it, and me and Quinn were both really excited because we had just gotten out of hockey practice. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I got a text from the coach because I wasn't at home when he called, but I was excited to get the news that I made Team Alaska.
So what do you do from here? You go up there and you play the games, and then where do you go from there? Is there a Team USA coming up?
We play and we hang out with our team and watch other sports compete.
And you've all got nice T-shirts that say Team Alaska on them.
We got a coat, snow pants, hat, a sweatshirt for the opening ceremony, and so we all have the same clothes for it.
What's it going to be like playing on a team when you haven't played with any of the people before?
I think it'll be a good experience, something we might have to get used to, fun meeting new friends, and just having a good experience there.
Anything else you want to bring up that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I think that's it.
Is there any way people can support your efforts by donating to the team at all, or is it just...
Not that I know of.
No, but you can follow them on... I don't have the website with me handy, but if you look up Arctic Winter Games and Team Alaska, you can follow their progress and see if any of these Juneau hockey players score.
All right, thanks so much for coming down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the music of Bonsoir Quintin, the guest artist for the 40th Annual Alaska Folk Festival coming up right around the corner starting April 7th.
Hi, this is Rob Cohen, inviting you to join me and a sextet of Juneau's finest jazz musicians in a tribute to Blue Note Records as part of the KRNN Spotlight series. The Blue Note label celebrates its 75th anniversary this year, and we're paying tribute with a selection of classic tunes by legendary composers such as John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, Horace Silver, and Wayne Shorter. It's at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Wednesday, March 19th at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. Tickets available at krnn.org, the station, or at the door.
Time is 3:57, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mininaw Valley and Auk Bay Area, K269 AO at Nunman and Switzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. Juneau KTOO is broadcast on DCA Cable Juneau on digital channel 871, also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Scott Burton will be your host. We'll highlight the Great Alaskan Shakeout with guests Tom Matisse and Jeremy Zadak. We'll get an update on the Pick, Click, Gift program with program director Heather Beatty. Ruben Willis will be here to offer details about the State Farm Insurance Neighborhood Assist Program. School District Administrative Services Director David Means will be here to talk about the proposed 2015 budget. Plus, Writers' Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Tonight at 7 o'clock, Peace Talk on KTOO News in Juneau. At 7 o'clock, they'll be featuring excerpts from an interview with Senator Mark Begich and local veterans. Weather forecast for tonight, the strong wind is expected to be from this evening through Tuesday morning. Rain developing, becoming heavy at times, level to 1,100 feet, low temperatures around 37 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, rain in the morning, then rain showers in the afternoon with high temperatures around 42 degrees. Tuesday night, rain, low temperatures around 34 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, ice, rain and snow with high temperatures around 41 degrees. Thursday, rain.